This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Going Global, the show where we speak to businesses and entrepreneurs from around the world. I'm Tasha Fusil. Today's guest, Bruce Pick-Pico, proves that the simplest idea can yield the greatest results. The focus he placed on product over profit eventually got his brand Pix recognition as one of the best natural peanut butters in the world. I'm here today with the founder of this New Zealand-based business to talk peanuts, passion, and promotions as Pick shares with us the smooth and crunchy side of business. My first question to him was, why peanut butter?
I've always liked peanut butter. And a long time ago, I was on a friend's boat in the Bay of Islands in New Zealand. And this guy said, what would you like on your sandwiches? And I said, oh, have you got some peanut butter? And he pulled out this American peanut butter, and it was called Health Style Peanut Butter. And I thought, peanut butter is healthy anyway. What could make it health style? And it was health style because it had reduced added sugar added to it. And I thought then, this is so must be so common in America. Sooner or later, we're going to get it in New Zealand. And 10 or 12 years ago, I started finding peanut butter with sugar added on our shelves in New Zealand. And I carefully avoided them because I thought it was revolting. And then one day I was just in a bit of a rush. I bought a big jar. I thought I'll just buy the ordinary home brand one, which will just be basic peanut butter. I got that home and put some on my toast, and it was half full of sugar. And I was horrified. And I rang up their 0800, the free call number, and I said, why are you putting sugar in my peanut butter? And they said, well, sir, that's the way everyone likes it. And I thought, well, actually, no. And a long time ago, my mum and auntie used to make a bit of peanut butter, and they'd just get peanuts and they'd roast them and they blended them up in their newfangled vitamizers. So I had a go at that. I just bought some peanuts and put them in the oven, roasted them, put them in the blender. And my son really liked it. He was 12 at the time, and his friends liked it. One of his friends liked it so much, he said, can I buy a jar? I'll give you $5. This was a 12-year-old. And I thought, well, this is interesting. You know, I could probably actually, you know, do this. And at the time, I just had to close a little laundromat that was giving me a couple of $100 a week. And I thought, well, if I made peanut butter on Friday morning and sold it at the market on Friday afternoon, I could probably get that cash back. So I spent about $10,000. I bought a stainless steel concrete mixer with a gas burner underneath it and a secondhand peanut grinder and a box of jars. And I hunted around for someone who'd sell me a ton of peanuts cheap. Anyway, so wholesale rather than cheap. Anyway, I bought a ton of peanuts from Australia, and I started roasting these things in the garage and grinding them up on the kitchen table, putting them in jars. And I'd make a couple of dozen or jars on Friday morning, and take them down to the market. And people kept coming back to get more. You know, every week people would come back and refill their jars, and people would come down from other parts of the country, and they'd say, look, I've friends. See, I must come and get some of this peanut butter when I came to Nelson. So I thought I was onto a good thing, but I didn't. I was quite happy. I was sort of almost retired, really. I had enough money to get by on if I was careful, and I was getting the money for the weekend. But then I had to move into a licensed factory, some sort of kitchen space. So I eventually did that, and we started growing a little bit. And I took on a couple of people who were working for a neighbouring business, and they came to help me out. And the three of us sort of ended up making about 1,000 jars of peanut butter a week. And I thought, well, this is good. You know, this is $1,000 a week. I mean, 1,000 jars, you know, $5,000, it's paying our wages, I'm getting a bit of money, and I will just keep it small and beautiful, and I won't get stressed out. I thought I'd particularly stay away from forklifts and invoicing staff. Eventually, a truck arrived with a pallet of jars for us, and the neighbour's forklifts weren't available. And so I thought, oh, I'll have to get a forklift.
So you were forced into your business.
I was, yeah. I got a forklift. I thought, well, you know, I've got a forklift now. Gloves are off. We'll just take this thing and take it to wherever it goes to. So I went to the Guangzhou Machinery Show. I sold all my shares that I had, and I went to the Guangzhou Machinery Show, wandered around buying a whole pile of stainless steel machines, and came back, brought them back to New Zealand, and set up a proper sort of factory that was in a new building. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea what a food factory even looked like, but we sort of muddled along and got it working. And then over time, I got some really good people around me, engineers and things, who got the factory working beautifully, and our capacity went in that factory. We started off only able to make less peanut butter than we had in the little factory, but over time we were able to produce up to 15,000 jars a day in that place.
Okay, so at that point, you were already supplying to supermarkets within New Zealand.
Yes, yes. We had got, by some sort of miracle, we'd got a HACCP clearance for our food safety program in the little factory, and that gave us license to sell to the supermarkets in New Zealand. But in the new factory, it gave us, you know, we had a really high standard of food management there, and we were able to start taking on overseas customers.
So it's a pretty classic feel-good success story, Pix, you know, in you wanting to solve a problem, you created a humble product and it went global.
I think it was a timing thing. You know, within a few weeks of us making our first jars of peanut butter and selling them at the market, there was some publicity come on in New Zealand about someone was shocked to find that their favourite sort of brand of peanut butter that they'd grown up with forever was being manufactured in China. A lot of people didn't like that. And it was also with the sugar added to it. And I hadn't been bothered that the fact it was made in China, but it was the sugar that had got me. But the public perception of the Chinese manufacturer had put a lot of people off. So we came along at the right time. It would have been better if we had better distribution at that time, but people were becoming aware that there was a difference between peanut butters. And yes, it was a remarkable thing because initially, because our peanut butter was so expensive, it's about nearly twice the price of the cheap stuff, many retailers thought, no, we'll never sell this.
It's available in Malaysia now. And I don't know, like, are the markets different? I mean, for consumers in New Zealand, it might be because it's an Australian produce. It's got no sugar. It's a healthy option, and maybe that's what you're used to having there. Here, we have been eating less than healthy peanut butter, I think, for the longest time. I mean, we didn't really know what healthy peanut butter was. So do you think that the market is different here?
Well, I think your peanut butter market here is at the same stage New Zealand was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. As people become aware of what real peanut butter can taste like, it changes everything.
Mm.
And we're finding this. We just did a food show yesterday with Trade and Enterprise New Zealand, and the number of people who are coming in there saying, look, I already buy this. I just love it. It's, you know, changed peanut butter for me. And that's what it's done, you know. I get people who say, look, I don't like peanut butter when I'm doing tastings. And I say, look, try this. This is so unlike other peanut butters you've eaten. It's a different thing. And it really is.
Tell me what's different about it.
Well, I struggled with this for quite a while because, you know, it just tasted good. And it's such a simple product. We just get peanuts, we roast them, squash them, and put them in a jar. Add a little bit of salt, and that's all we do. We all have an unsalted one too if you don't fancy a bit of salt or if you've got funny ideas about what sort of salt's good for you. But I think what it's come down to is the hyalaic peanuts. And hyalaic nuts were developed in America, but America can't grow them because they cross-pollinate with their ordinary peanuts. So in Argentina and in Australia, they were able to grow only hyalaic peanuts. And I just happened to get the hyalaic Australian peanuts when I first started out. And I have since been trying peanuts from all over the world. Mm. And these are exceptional. They're amazing flavor. And the hyalaic qualities is that the nuts never go rancid. So they stay fresh and they never get that funny metallic taste. And a lot of the cheaper peanuts that are available on the market will go rancid very quickly and they don't have the same flavour. It's a subtle thing, that rancidity, but the hyalaic peanuts are almost rancidity proof. And at one stage we had to go to Argentina to get nuts after the floods in Queensland, and we got the hyalaic nuts from Argentina. But they didn't have the same depth of flavour. They were sweeter. And I put that down to being harvested younger, but they just didn't have the flavour. So the Australian nuts are absolutely unique. And we've tried nuts from everywhere, and those Australian nuts are unique. And the other thing that we do is because we fresh roast them, we put them in the jar while they're still warm from out of the oven. And this is something I realised when my mum used to do peanuts at cocktail parties, and she'd roast them, you know, in the evening before the party, and they'd put them out in little bowls. They're absolutely delicious, but in the morning they tasted like rubbish. So fresh is really important, and so when we fresh grind them, it preserves. They stay in the peanut butter just keeps really well and doesn't need any additives.
Okay, so the kind of peanut butter that we can find in the market today, especially say an American brand, it'd be a completely different taste.
It is, and they do have most brands add emulsifiers to them, which prevents the oil from separating. Ours will separate over time. So you'll find a layer of oil on top of the peanut butter. After 4 or 5 months, it starts to separate off, and particularly the smooth one separates quickly. So you have to mix that up. And you have to mix it up seriously. You can't just wave a teaspoon at it. You have to mix it up and mix it up like you're mixing paint until it's all the same. And then it'll stay good for 3 months or so. But if you keep it for 3 months after you've mixed it, I'll be very surprised. In fact, I'll give you your money back because it's so good. You'll just want to eat it up, you know,
straight away. Yeah, it shouldn't still be in the jar.
No.
What's that process like? I mean, because you're now available in, well, what countries are you available in now?
Available everywhere in New Zealand. We're the best-selling peanut butter in New Zealand by a long way. We're in Australia, so we're in all the major supermarkets in Australia and a lot of the independents. We've got distribution on the east coast, on the west coast of America. So we're in Bristol Farms in America, and it's a small chain, a chain of natural food stores. We've got a shop in New York that sells it, and one in Narrowsburg upstate, where my daughter has a holiday home, so she's managed to get us into a little shop upstate New York. And we've got distribution in London, so we do mail order within the UK, and we also have 4 weekend markets that we run within London that get us a really good following. And that's an important part of our marketing strategy, is to actually get people eating the stuff before we even start looking at distributors.
Okay, so get the interest from the consumers first.
Yeah. Our supermarkets don't buy food, people do. So we sell to people, not to supermarkets, really.
Well, what's that process like to get into a country? Well, I mean, how do you even get to the people? How do you get them eating the peanut butter?
Tastings. So we stand around with a jar and a number of wooden sticks, and people wander past. We say, try this. And people say, I don't like peanut butter. I say, look, I say, try this. This is not like peanut butter you've eaten before. And 70% of those people, I mean, if they say they've got an allergy, I'll let them go. But 70% of people who say they don't like peanut butter try our stuff and they think, oh, I could eat this, you know, because it's just fresh roasted peanuts. It's such a different thing.
Then how about, getting to suppliers then? How do you get them on board, especially in other countries? Like, for example, Malaysia, how did that happen?
Okay, well, Malaysia, we work with Eco Healthy Foods, which is a Singapore-based company run by Malaysians, and they are frequent visitors to Nelson, so they deal in salmon and things like this. And they came to see us, they just ran into us in the Nelson market, and Mei Kwan, who's our agent over here, came to see us in the Nelson market, and they said, look, we'd like to sell your stuff in Malaysia, in Singapore. So we had never thought of Singapore as a market, and so I said, okay, give it a go. And so they've done really well. So and from Singapore, they've found really good acceptance within cold storage and a number of the chains in Singapore. And so Malaysia's become interested as well.
What's stopping a brand from doing what Pix is doing right now?
I think it's the idea that you feel you've got to do exactly what everyone else does, that you find a distributor and look for, you know, you do marketing, send millions on marketing and muck around and do advertising and stuff like that. It's so powerful to have people telling their friends that this is worth eating. So we've never advertised. I think if we advertised, people would think, okay, they're advertising, I don't need to tell my friends. But when people discover our product, and especially if we can talk to them, you know, if I get a chance to talk to somebody, they never, you know, next time they're talking about peanut butter, they'll say, I met this guy, you know, he makes this peanut butter, and it's amazing. And people tell their friends, and it becomes something special. I would have never have thought that anyone could get as passionate about a grocery item as people get about our peanut butter. If you're wandering through a supermarket and you're standing there looking at an aisle of stuff and somebody, just a stranger, taps you on the shoulder and says, that one down there is worth eating, you'll buy it.
Yes, that's
just
true.
Just that tiny recommendation from a real person, and it's real people that matter. It's not sort of advertisements and anything that sways people. It's their friends' recommendations, and that's what has happened with us. It's just been word of mouth. We've been picked up, and it's amazing. It's really humbling.
Bruce Pick Picot, the creator and founder of Pix Peanut Butter from New Zealand. We'll be getting marketing advice from Pick when we come back, so don't go anywhere. This is Going Global, BFM 89.9.
You want to be a successful entrepreneur? Get complete business solutions with UnifiBiz to maximize profits, exclusively for BFM listeners. Stand a chance to win prizes worth 2,700 ringgit by subscribing or upgrading to UnifiBiz Pro or Advanced and completing a slogan. Go to bfm.my/tm today. Contest ends 22nd May. Terms and conditions apply. TM, business made easier.
Good morning. This is Going Global with me, Tasha Fussell. I've got Bruce Pick-Picot in the studios with me this morning. He's the creator of Pick's Peanut Butter, an all-natural, sugar- and preservative-free peanut butter that's made its way into the kitchens and supermarket aisles all around the world. So I'm looking at Pick, and he's got a red star badge on his shirt, the same star that you can find on the lids of his peanut butter. So Pick, tell me more about this star.
We do have a red star, and we stick that on our vehicles. We've got a great big one on the side of the factory down in Nelson. The first labels I made were just a brown paper label, and I found a nice border that had a series of stars that I put a little border around something on the label. And we used to have a black lid. And so we got a glass jar with a nice brown paper label, like the old butcher's paper, and a tiny splash of lead on, red on the label. And we had this black lid, and our lid supplier said to us one day, she said, "Oh, look, if you order 100,000 lids, we can give you free printing." And I thought, first of all, I thought, oh, good, 100,000 lids. You know, that's 100,000 lids at $5 each. That would be numbers I'd never even dreamed of. And then I thought, well, what would look nicer than just a plain black lid? And I thought, a red star. And so we put a red star on the lid, and it's really worked. And the neat thing about our jars is that where they're a glass jar, they've got a black lid with a nice red star in the middle of it. There's no branding or anything on the lid, but people know that it's ours somehow. And people got right into people's homes, and aunties are giving their nephews and nieces jars of pickles or jam in one of our jars. So it's taken us right to people's hearts. It's been a really cool thing. And it means that our jars get reused instead of recycled. So, and that's been really important to me. I don't want to see filling up the world with junk and plastic and muck. So,
how do you intend on maintaining that sort of very honest sort of marketing style and that down-to-earth kind of branding as your brand expands all over the world?
We keep a close eye on what our distributors are doing. So anything any stuff May produces, we give her all the guidelines and things. Anybody who's working with our brand has to send anything back to us for approval. I've got a really wonderful marketing team back in New Zealand who've got a very clear idea of where I want things to go. And if I see something that's not to my taste, you know, I say, look, we don't want this, get rid of this, change this, you know.
What's an example of something that you wouldn't be too happy with?
Well, we make a product called Slugs, and these are peanut butter sachets, and they're a snack-sized sachet of peanut butter. So when you get hungry, instead of buying a muesli bar, and you just look at the ingredients on these muesli bars, and by the time you've looked at three muesli bars and about sort of 1,600 ingredients, you're thinking, oh, I'm sick of this, and you come across something that says ingredients, peanuts and salt, and it's this little bar, little sachet. And we've called it a slug because the idea that it's, you know, a slug of peanut butter like a slug of whiskey or something. And then I came across some cartons in the factory the other day that had just been all printed up, and there was a little picture of a slug on it. And I said, look, this isn't right. You know, this isn't what we mean here. We don't want pictures of slugs on our cartons.
A bit too literal.
Yeah. I mean, nice try, you know, but no staff with that one.
All right. What do you enjoy about being in the business?
Well, I just love the opportunity to promote the product, you know, to be out there doing tastings and telling people about the thing. And I know, you know, with my name on the jar, and if I talk to people, it really means something for them, you know, and it means a lot for the brand. And it's something that people really don't forget, because we have so little connection with our food these days. And so our factory down in Nelson is open. We do factory tours every day. And when we started doing them, the engineers were saying, oh, we can't do this, you know. People will see how to make peanut butter, and they'll go off and build factories and stuff. And I don't care. It's far more important to us that we have consumers who love what we're doing, you know, who are involved. And it's their involvement that really matters. It's nothing to do with the way we make it or anything. There's no secrets with that.
And how about picking up on the entrepreneurial side? I mean, like the business side of the business. I mean, was that something that you knew going in? Because you said before, I mean, you ran a small laundromat. I mean, you didn't really have that sort of business training.
No, I've run a lot of businesses. I had a laundromat, I had a sailing school, and I had a restaurant sort of in the last 20 years. And then before that, I was a boat builder. I'd made furniture, I made giftware. So I had a bit of experience with marketing. And I'd made leather bags and sandals when I was at school.
Wow.
So I've done a lot of things, and I had a fair idea about selling things, but I had very little idea about how to manage a business. So very early on, once at that point where I decided I was getting over my problem with forklifts and invoicing staff, I thought I'd get some assistance. So I've got a cousin who's a stockbroker up in Auckland. So he was in contact with people who knew about business and things. So I asked him to recommend me some people who could give me a bit of guidance. So we've got a wonderful management board that helps us out. We meet; they meet every couple of months, and just keep an eye on our KPIs and make sure that we're heading in the right direction. So that's been invaluable, and it's I can't emphasize too much how good that's been. Also, we've got a wonderful general manager, and Stuart has got a lot of experience with food and beverage business. And honestly, after when our second supermarket was coming on, and I was sort of carrying on with it myself, and then they were presenting us all these different terms from the previous supermarket, had sort of rolled up terms and discounts and payment things, and this other one had slightly different figures for stuff. And so to be fair, to give them both the same price, you had to go through all these incredibly complicated calculations, and it needed somebody who understood these things. So Stuart came along and helped us with that, initially as a consultant, but now he's our general manager. And he's been really good. It's just been amazing. And our whole team has really picked up the ball. It's hard as we're growing because people's jobs change a lot. And so we have to let go of certain areas and pick up on others. And some people have been able to handle that and others haven't. So
you've had to learn sort of the whole business of managing people as well.
Right, yeah. And that's we've got a really good business incubation outfit in New Zealand called the Ice House. And so that's connected to Auckland University, and they run courses. The one I was attending was an owner-manager course, and they realised that there's a lot of people in New Zealand, particularly tradespeople, who've got a business going and it's grown and grown and grown, and they're good at their trade, whatever it is, but they've got these huge businesses that they're sort of floundering with how to manage. So these courses are particularly aimed at people like that. And so for me, we got together over about 6 months. We would have four or five or six long weekends together, and the same group get back together and look at our businesses. We had some amazing business people come to talk to us, and marketing and finance and banking and all sorts of people, and some really, really people who'd done really, really well and just gave up their time to come and talk to us, and it was invaluable, particularly the contact with the other guys, because Nelson's a small town. It's only 40,000 people. And as the owner, manager of a company like that, it's hard to find people doing a similar kind of thing, and you can actually share your what your problems are. And so all these businesses, they'll have very similar issues, and it was really neat for me to understand what was happening there with these guys. And because I'm not hands-on in the business, we've got Stuart in there as the general manager, I like to spend my time looking into where we're heading in the future, looking at the technologies that are going to be changing the face of retail and distribution, and just sort of planning for where we might be in 10 years' time or 20 years' time, because I think our business is going to be around for a long time.
Well, and what do you think that's going to look like? I mean, how do you think technology is going to affect the business?
I don't see as much call for supermarkets. A lot of the stuff we buy the same thing every week. So I'm looking at doing a subscription-based peanut butter distribution thing. And because of the involvement that our customers have got, I'm very keen on doing a sort of a multi-level marketing thing on an online basis. So we can send, say, a couple of cases of peanut butter to somebody in the middle of Uzbekistan, and they can get their friends, let their friends know that they've got it, and we can help them with that. And so people can set up their own little businesses distributing our peanut butter directly to their friends, which is the most powerful way of engaging people with it. And so that's something I'm really looking forward to doing.
I mean, in terms of profitability for your end, does that model work better for you?
Well, we haven't really tried it yet.
Yeah.
But that's the wonderful thing about making a bit of money is that we can try things. We don't have to worry that, if this doesn't work, it's going to be the end of everything. So we're able to try things. And that's been the neatest thing about this, about making some money in this business, that we're not frightened to muck things up,
What challenges does PIX face? I mean, could it be different to you? I want to know what your challenges are as well, but what are the brand's challenges?
Well, I don't really see too much. I mean, it'd be awful if something went wrong with our product, a recall or something or that kind of thing.
Because those kind of things do happen. I mean, we've had people come in and tell us about maybe certain batches going into other countries being rejected.
Yeah.
And being destroyed.
Yeah.
Do you have those kind of problems?
We haven't yet, although we did have somebody wanted to took a pallet of our stuff into China and said, yes, I've got friends in China, I'm going to take this to China. And they got as far as the border, and they had never done any importing before. And the Chinese looked at it and said, butter, this is butter. You need a dairy certificate. We cannot let it in until you get a dairy certificate. And these people came back to us and said, you didn't provide us with a dairy certificate. We need a dairy certificate. And, you know, anyway, it got rejected. And after a year, we got this pallet of stuff back. And we did. They'd paid for it, but we did give them half the money back. And we gave the stuff to the wildlife sanctuaries for their rat traps, I think, because it was all getting close to its use by.
Right.
So that was the only problem we'd ever had with that kind of thing. And we're getting to the point now that if we did have a batch, even a container rejected, it wouldn't really be the end of the world because we're sending four or five containers to different parts of the world now.
All right. And what about yourself? I mean, what sort of personal challenges?
Well, I'm getting old. You know, I'm 63. Well, not really old. But anyway, it's one of the things. I mean, it would be amazing if I'd sort of latched onto this when I was 30. But having said that, I had a hell of a good time between 30 and 55.
No regrets.
Yeah, no regrets at all. But and I do have an eyesight problem. So I have macular degeneration, which means I can't read or drive. But what the good thing about that has been that I have employed people and I have relied on people, and people have really risen without because I can't sort of ride them. I can't sit over their shoulders and look at their spreadsheets and check their numbers and do all sort of be really annoying. And I think the people that I work with have really appreciated this, and I think it has made a huge difference to the business. I think it's been very responsible for the business growing. I'm sure a lot of the businesses I've had in the past could have been really amazing if I'd let people got good people in and let them have their head. So it has been hasn't been a disadvantage at all. And the other thing I have got is I've been given a guide dog by the Blind Foundation in New Zealand. And that's been amazing. I can take this guy wherever I go. And nobody forgets a peanut butter guy, the peanut butter guy with the guide dog. You know? It's wonderful. And he's such a hunk. He's a lovely dog.
I don't think there are many peanut butter makers out there, makers of any kind of product, that are traveling or that go around really selling the product with that sincerity that you do.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, it's my name on it. And I, you know, I do like showing off, and it's so nice. It's like being a ventriloquist. You know, you're standing, you've got the dummy beside you, and even a shy guy could be a ventriloquist because it's the dummy that does the talking. So that's the peanut butter that does the talking, and the peanut butter is the celebrity. I just sort of follow it round, but I just love it. It gives me an opportunity to talk to anyone. You know, I can talk to children, I can talk to people passing through, anyone that takes my fancy. I can say, have a go at this peanut butter. And there's such opportunity always for doing this stuff. I mean, when I go through airports, on occupation, I put peanut butter maker on the immigration cards. And these guys are standing there, they're seeing cards saying consultant, mother, CEO, IT person, you know, all this kind of really, really boring stuff. And then they see something that says peanut butter maker. And they can immediately, their eyes light up. They've got something that they can ask someone about. So very often, you know, these customs guys, we'll end up chatting about it, and I'll tell them where they can buy it. And they say, well, yes, I'll go off and buy this. And it's the same with taxi drivers. And it's so worth it for me. I get a taxi driver, and I give them a taste, and they like it. And I know that's going to, you know, that's going to bring us in $100 a year for the rest of his life.
And I mean, and that's you thinking about marketing just in a different spin.
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, work is work and life is life, and they don't want to sort of, you know, they'd feel awful about talking to all their friends about work all the time. But actually, it's such a neat thing for people to have. It's such a good product. You know, it's so natural and it's so healthy. I feel so lucky to have something that I can sell that I have absolutely believe that people will enjoy themselves much more by eating it. I'm doing them a favor by giving them a taste, forcing them to try it. I'm doing them a favor, you know? And they don't know it until they try it. But sometimes they need to be forced, and I'm happy to do that.
Well, what marketing advice would you give to other entrepreneurs out there?
I think find yourself a product you really believe in, and don't be afraid to be enthusiastic, you know. It's the product, it's not you. You can stand around, wave your hands and be as stupid as you like. It's the product that's the king there, and be proud of it. I think that's the main thing. And enthusiasm. I think enthusiasm is unbeatable. You know, somebody's enthusiastic. Everybody wants to be a part of enthusiasm, and I think that's find yourself a product you can be enthusiastic about and just go for it.
Bruce Pick Pickle of Pick's Peanut Butter from New Zealand. This is Going Global, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.